This is Wednesday, August 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump has changed his tune after North Korea launched a missile that passed over Japan. The United Nations is trying to find some way of further punishing Pyongyang.
North Korea has violated every single Security Council resolution and violated international law.
Also ahead, while what was Hurricane Harvey is still causing catastrophic flooding in Houston, the now tropical storm has moved into neighboring Louisiana. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump says talking is not the answer when it comes to dealing with the threat of North Korea following that country's most recent ballistic missile test. Trump wrote on Twitter this morning that the U.S. has been talking with North Korea and paying them extortion money for 25 years. Talking is not the answer. North Korea has acknowledged firing a ballistic missile over Japan, saying it was to counter current joint exercises by South Korea and the United States. In a Wednesday morning dispatch from Pyongyang, the official Korean Central News Agency quoted leader Kim Jong-un as saying the drill for the launch of the Hwasong-12 intermediate-range ballistic missile was like a real war, and the first step by North Korea's military for operations in the Pacific and a meaningful prelude to containing Guam. South Korean President Moon Jae-in and Japanese leader Shinzo Abe agreed in a telephone call Wednesday that maximum pressure needs to be applied in order to get North Korea to engage in dialogue and resolve the ongoing crisis. Early Wednesday, the U.S. Navy shot down a medium-range ballistic missile off the coast of Hawaii, all part of a test of defensive systems, according to officials. Now, the U.N. Security Council has condemned the latest North Korean missile launch. The 15-member council unanimously called the firing of the Hwasong-12 over Japan Tuesday a threat to all U.N. members. It demanded Pyongyang abandon both its nuclear and missile programs. Nikki Haley is the U.S. U.N. ambassador.
We are all denouncing North Korea's outrageous act against another UN member state, Japan. We are all demanding North Korea stop any future missile launches. We are all demanding North Korea abandon its nuclear weapons. North Korea has violated every single Security Council resolution and violated international law. We are all calling on every nation to strictly, fully, and immediately implement all Security Council sanctions on North Korea. The world is united against North Korea. There is no doubt about that. It is time for the North Korean regime to recognize the danger they are putting themselves in. The United States will not allow their lawlessness to continue.
Robert Manning, a senior fellow at the Washington-based Atlantic Council, told VOA's Victor Beatty this missile was launched after the North had threatened to fire at least four missiles toward the waters around Guam.
They try to calibrate these things so it's just below the threshold where the U.S. is likely to respond. And so by firing it over to Japan, he sends a message that he can hit U.S. forces without going towards Guam, where President Trump has threatened to respond. I think that may have been what he was trying to do.
The president had a fairly muted response in a statement. Threatening and destabilizing actions only increase the North Korean regime's isolation in the region and among all nations of the world. All options are on the table.
I think we're getting used to, believe, the 18th missile test so far this year from North Korea. So it's hard to respond to everyone appropriately or strongly, and I think the message that all options are on the table was, I think, the important point, and the president made that. The thing I worry about is that Kim Jong-un sees President Trump as a paper tiger, because if you go back through all his tweets, and when they said they were going to do a missile test, Trump says it won't happen. He keeps making these statements, and Kim keeps responding by one-upping him, and I think that's what we saw with the missile over Japan. That raises the risks of miscalculation, which often is how military conflicts happen.
Robert, in an article in which you were interviewed, titled North Korea Tests Donald Trump, you said North Korea's latest missile test came perilously close to being an act of war.
There are protocols when you test a missile so that people using the airspace are notified. They didn't do any of that. They just fired a missile that went over Japanese territory. That's a pretty reckless act. It's not quite an act of war, but it's pretty close. It's getting closer. It happened in 1998, and then when you talk to many Japanese, they felt that was sort of their 9/11. And I think maybe next time, if they have the capability, they may shoot down a missile that comes their way.
Well, why didn't they do it this time?
That's a good question. What they said was they didn't see it as a threat to national security. They were watching where it was going. They have multi-layered missile defense systems, some of which are on Aegis cruisers, so if they were in the right place, they technically might have had a shot at a mid-course hit, but they chose not to do that.
Robert Manning said the Trump administration is trying to come up with an appropriate response, perhaps cyber warfare. While sanctions are effective, he said, they take time while the North moves ahead perfecting its nuclear capability. The weather forecast said that the city of Houston, Texas, would finally get some relief from historic rain today as Tropical Storm Harvey pulls away from East Texas into neighboring Louisiana. Let's check in with VOA's Celia Mendoza. She is still in waterlogged Houston. Celia, has that forecast been correct so far?
Yes, it has been, actually. That's the issue. This time, the meteorologists said that the European model that they were following went pretty much down path to what they saw. And the consequences are pretty much just what they predicted. Devastating, catastrophic flood. And now we're seeing that going to Louisiana. There's a lot of people there. They will be underwater. That's what they're forecasting. We hope that that changes a little bit, since Harvey has been a very long-term storm. It's been a week since we started talking about Harvey, and we're still talking about it. This is definitely something that we were not really expecting. Hopefully, it changes in the next few days.
The estimates so far by local and state officials say that rescuers have taken more than 13,000 people from flooded homes. Thousands were staying in shelters. How are these people doing? Any estimate how many people are still in their homes at all?
Not really an estimate of how many people still at their homes, but they are keep looking. They are making sure that they go in boats, helicopters. We're talking about thousands of people that were not able to come back to their homes. Now, we don't know if there are thousands that are still in their homes, but we know that it's a large amount. The rescue have definitely shown that. More than 30,000 people are currently in more than 230 shelters and federal emergency management agencies. So that gives you an idea of how many people is getting out. But it is a very, very hard situation. We are visiting some of the neighborhoods where we had to access in a boat to be able to get into the homes of these people. But the good news is that we have seen that the water is coming down pretty quickly in some of those areas. Now, the areas that are closer to the dams, it might be a little bit more difficult because the overflow of the water.
That is VOA Celia Mendoza joining us live from Houston. Celia, thank you so much once again, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's move now to Andrew Palczewski, and he's been watching. He has his eyes on social media. Still a big story on social media?
Still a trending topic, and we're seeing different topics pop up on social media. Today it's Port Arthur, Texas, just outside of Houston, and it's trending because on social media, people are sending out messages begging to be rescued from the floodwaters. And you're seeing photos that people are sending from up in their attic where they're saying the waters are reaching up close to the roof. We need to be rescued. We've talked about in the past couple days how the U.S. Coast Guard has said not to post on social media to call rescue numbers to get more immediate response. But
hey, if you're panicking and need a way out and can't find it, that's a possibility. Right?
And that's exactly what's happening. People are panicking. They're in very dire situations, can't get through on the phone lines. And so you are seeing these heartbreaking pictures on social media of the floodwaters rising and people trying to get out. You're also seeing President Trump trending today, a day after he went to Texas with First Lady Melania Trump to receive a briefing about the efforts there. Tweeting out and saying, after witnessing firsthand the horror and devastation caused by Hurricane Harvey, my heart goes out even more to the great people of Texas, which is receiving a lot of support from both sides of the aisle, but some criticism there too, because President Trump didn't meet with any of the victims. And what we've begun to see are a lot of people putting up on social media photos of past presidents, Republicans and Democrats, meeting with victims of natural disasters.
But we should say he is headed back on Saturday and hopefully will meet with some of those victims. He came out yesterday, give him credit, and said that, you know, he really didn't want to get in the way. And that's one of the reasons that happened that way.
And that is some of the praise that he's receiving, that he did go down there, didn't try to make it a big spectacle, didn't try to impede any of the efforts that are going on with law enforcement. And knowing that President Trump keeps a close eye on social media, I suspect that he will indeed meet with some victims this weekend when he goes back down, seeing the response that he's getting on Twitter.
Thanks, Andrew. Andrew Palczewski on social media. We'll talk again tomorrow, as always. Among the top stories in the world, President Trump says talking is not the answer when it comes to dealing with the threat of North Korea. Harvey, the devastating storm that flooded a huge swath of Texas in Houston, made landfall again Wednesday, moving to the east and drenching the neighboring state of Louisiana. Pakistan's National Assembly strongly denounces President Trump's new policy on Afghanistan, calling his statements on Pakistan hostile and threatening. U.S. transgender groups will remain in service as the Pentagon studies President Trump's ban. And a U.S.-led airstrike blocks IS fighters from reaching Syria. Expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on VOA's social media platforms. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A Cambridge University-led team of astronomers say they've discovered the smallest star that has been measured so far. The tiny sun was calculated to be a little larger than Saturn and is the smaller of the two stars in a binary system located about 600 light-years away. The team was able to identify the mini-star as it transited or passed in front of its larger companion. It's the same detection method used by scientists to find exoplanets. They use the facilities of the UK's WASP exoplanet detection program. The astronomers say they think the star is probably the smallest size possible for it to have enough mass to sustain the hydrogen fusion needed to become a full-fledged star and not a brown dwarf or failed star. Details of the astronomers' findings are to be published in the journal Astronomy and Astrophysics. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
International Edition continues. The price of gasoline in the United States is headed up, and maybe it's headed up where you live if you're not in the United States. That most likely is a direct effect of hurricanes, since downgraded to Tropical Storm Harvey as its rains have flooded Houston, Texas, the fourth largest city in the United States and home to major oil-producing facilities. VOA's economics correspondent Jim Randall joins us on International Edition. Tell us more about what's going on. I mean, what kind of effect has the flooding and the storm had on the oil production in the Houston area?
Well, a couple of things. One, they had to evacuate offshore oil production facilities because of howling winds and high waves and so forth. And the other impact is a lot of flooding. So it's the port of Houston is closed and has been for a while. So crude oil coming in or going out, that's not happening. Refined products, jet fuel, gasoline, whatever, that's not going anywhere. At least not for a while. And even probably a longer-term problem is that many oil refineries have been flooded. So what's happened is that the gasoline prices have gone up 25 cents a gallon. That would be about 6.5 cents a liter because there's worry about supply. If the refineries are closed, they can't turn out gasoline. That's going to crimp supply. That tends to boost prices. There's a sort of a little ironic twist here that the price of crude has actually dropped a little bit because without refineries to refine the stuff, demand for crude has gone down a bit. So that's a little odd, but that's why it's understandable.
What about other effects? There are all kinds of problems and all kinds of predictions about how much this storm is going to cost. How much is it costing people? How much will it be costing governments? And who's going to pay for all this?
Well, the real answer is nobody knows what the cost is. The cost estimates started out in the low billions, and then they went to 10, 20, 30. I've been seeing $60 and $80 billion. The real answer is nobody knows, because a lot of the infrastructure is underwater, and it's hard to tell whether it's been damaged, and if so, how much, and how much it will cost to replace it. So we need to be a little judicious about estimating things that we can't see. That said, it's obviously a very serious problem. Now, I've talked to a couple of economists who said, yes, it's a very serious problem for Houston. However, the overall economy is probably going to perk along. It's probably not going to have a major, it's not going to derail the U.S. economy, which is the world's largest. Consumer confidence is strong. The newest figures say that. And consumer confidence matters because consumers drive most U.S. economic activity. There's going to be an economic problem in Houston because the stores are closed. The refineries are closed. Businesses are closed. So if you're on an hourly wage and you're not working, you're going to be financially, that's going to hurt you a lot. But even the millions of people who live in Houston are not going to have that much impact on the overall economy. It'll be noticeable. It'll be measurable, but it'll be temporary, and it won't be, in a national context, won't be that big a deal. For Houston itself, it's going to be devastating. It's going to be a big problem there.
VOA economics correspondent Jim Randall with us here on International Edition. Once again, thanks, Jim.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
This is VOA.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
The United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights is warning that freedom of the press in the United States is under attack from the country's own president. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN Human Rights Chief Zayed Raad al-Hussein says words have consequences, actions have consequences, and both must be chosen wisely. Zayed says President Trump's characterization of respected newspapers and media outlet as liars and crooks is damaging. He says the reference to journalists as dishonest and bad people and purveyors of fake news is potentially dangerous.
Is this not an incitement for others to attack journalists? And let's assume a journalist is harmed from one of these organizations. Does the president then not bear responsibility for this, for having fanned this?
Zayed says the demonization of the press is poisonous because it has consequences elsewhere. He says the words of the U.S. president reverberate around the world.
We see now in Cambodia, for example, the licenses of media, radio programs are being lifted off the air. And the President of the United States, his remarks are being cited. Is this going to expand in this way?
Zayed notes freedom of the press is a cornerstone of the U.S. Constitution, adding he is amazed that instead of defending this right, press freedom is now under attack from the President of the United States. He calls this a stunning turnaround and ultimately a dangerous one, leading to incitement and fear, self-censorship and banning, and then violence. Trump has regularly criticized major news media outlets like CNN, The New York Times, and The Washington Post. Earlier in August, he took aim at news organizations for their coverage of a violent rally organized by white supremacists in Charlottesville, Virginia. He called the journalists truly dishonest people. Trump has lashed out at the media in speeches and on Twitter. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We continue on International Edition with some other stories making news. The International Organization for Migration says at least 18,000 ethnic Rohingya have fled into Bangladesh over the past week since renewed fighting erupted between militants and the army in neighboring Myanmar. The IOM says a series of coordinated attacks by the Muslim Rohingya insurgents on security forces in the north of Myanmar's Rakhine State and subsequent clashes triggered the exodus. The migration agency says the number of people stranded in the no man's land at the border was difficult to ascertain, but added that large numbers appeared to be stranded there. The highest ranking U.S. official, well, we did that story, so we'll pass that pass on that. That is the one you just heard from Lisa Schlein. The Russian government has confirmed that it was contacted by an advisor to Donald Trump about a stalled Moscow real estate project during Trump's 2016 presidential campaign. Russian President Vladimir Putin's spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Wednesday he did receive an email from Trump's personal lawyer Michael Cohen about reviving a Trump Tower construction project in Moscow. Peskov said in response to reporters' questions in Moscow, "I can confirm that among the massive emails that there was an email from Mr. Michael Cohen, this really happened." Peskov said he did not reply to the email because it was not pertinent to his job as a spokesman, nor did he discuss the matter with Putin. Cohen said in a statement to the House Intelligence Committee investigating Russian meddling in last year's presidential election that Trump's company sought to revive the Moscow building project. The request for help came in January of 26 in an email from Cohen to Peskov, according to the document submitted to Congress on Monday. Cohen's email represents the most direct example of outreach from a high-ranking Trump aide to a senior official in the Russian government. Contact between Russia's Trump associates and Russian officials has been the focus of several investigations into Russia's interference in the 2016 elections. Now, about the project, Cohen said the project was abandoned due to various reasons. That's going to wrap it up for us today on International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our thanks to Director Patrice Martin, our engineer Thomas Blondet. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The governments of France, the United Kingdom, and the United States welcome the recent announcement by the Libyan National Army, or LNA, that it will investigate reports of unlawful killings in Benghazi. The LNA has recognized the arrest warrant by the International Criminal Court prosecutor for a member of the LNA, Major Mahmoud Mustafa Bouseif Al-Werfali, and has suspended him pending an investigation. The United States calls on the LNA to ensure that the investigation is carried out fully and fairly, and those responsible for the unlawful killings are held to account. Al-Werfali, a senior Libyan military commander, stands accused by the International Criminal Tribunal judges of personally shooting or ordering the execution of 33 people who were either civilians or injured fighters in at least seven incidents in 2016 and 2017. Major Al-Werfali is loyal to strongman Khalifa Haftar, a former general under longtime dictator Muammar Gaddafi. Haftar heads the most powerful military in Libya, and his forces recently managed to retake Benghazi after a three-year campaign against other militant groups. The U.S. is monitoring ongoing acts of conflict in Libya closely. Those suspected of committing, ordering, or failing to prevent unlawful killings and torture on all sides must be fully investigated and held accountable. The U.S. and its allies will continue efforts at the international level to pursue appropriate action against those who are complicit in violations of international human rights law or international humanitarian law, whatever their affiliation. It is in Libya's interest to be able to rely on unified security forces responsible for the country's security and acting within the framework of Libya's laws and respecting international law. The governments of France, the United Kingdom, and the United States also reaffirm their support for the Government of National Accord. We underscore the importance of the United Nations' central role in facilitating Libyan-led political dialogue, welcome the appointment of the new special representative of the Secretary General, Ghassan Salamé, and look forward to supporting his efforts to facilitate a political solution in Libya.
That was an editorial.